I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The second half of the legislative session is underway, and there will be major debates over a number of key issues. Issues like gun control measures, the financing of education, and property tax reform, raising the state minimum wage, paid family leave, and balancing the state budget for next year. What is Governor Phil Scott's position on these and many other important issues? We're going to find out today because the governor is our guest on Vermont Edition. Governor, great to have you back on the program.
Well, thanks very much for having me on.
Governor, let's start off with the whole issue of guns. And it seems like the case of the Fairhaven student who was allegedly plotting a mass murder had a huge impact on you because the day after or in the afternoon after the Florida shootings, I think you said that you didn't see any need to really change Vermont's gun control laws. But once the Fairhaven incident took place, it seemed like it changed your mind almost overnight. Is that true? Tell me what happened.
Yeah. You know, it was a very trying time for many. We saw the results of the horrific incident in Florida unfold in front of our eyes. And right at that very moment, we averted almost the same crisis here in Vermont, almost for the same day. And it was a result, had it not been for the bravery of a couple of folks, I'm afraid that we would be seeing the same effect here, because this one disturbed young man had it in his mind that and he had plotted this out, and he actually had a plan to do so, to cause great horrific harm at Fairhaven. And I read the night before, obviously we're one of the safest states in the union, and I had been saying that for quite some time because I believed it, that we're safe, we're insulated from this, we're a small population, this can't happen in Vermont. And as soon as I read the affidavit, I began to understand that we're not as special as I thought, and that this has been planned for a number of months right under our noses, and that, again, if it hadn't been for two people coming forward after a concerning text exchange, that we could be facing the same thing that Florida is. So anyone that hasn't read the affidavit, I would recommend that they do so, because it really had an incredible effect on me, and I think that it would anyone reading it. So I've advocated for that. I also want to we need to change some of how we describe what's going on. It's not all about guns. It's about violence. And from my perspective, we have to take a look. I have a responsibility as governor to provide for the public safety of Vermonters. And in this case, I felt we had averted a very close call. And I had an obligation to react. And we had a rare opportunity to reflect on what we can do better. I had to do some soul searching and ask myself, are we doing everything we can to protect our youth and our schools at this present time, knowing that this this one event and numerous events over the last couple of years has led to more, I believe. So we determined that we needed to put together an action plan and did so. So we want to take I've directed the Vermont State Police to do an assessment of all the schools in Vermont and take a look by the end of the month, come back to me with some sort of assessment plan as to what we can do to better protect our kids in the schools if needed. And by doing so, coming up with that assessment, I've asked the legislature to work with me in providing for $5 million in school security grants.
And what are you looking for there? Do you, when you say school security, do you mean more than, you know, doors should be locked, there should be video of people trying to get in? What are you looking for?
All the above. Anything to do to help schools upgrade their security infrastructure. And it's different for different schools. Some have resource officers. Some have door lock capability. Some have security cameras. Some have other means of protecting their students. But I don't believe it's across the board. And as well, this is something I recognized a few years ago, as a matter of fact, with 911. I don't know if you remember that, but when I was lieutenant governor, I was approached by the sheriff and police chief association, Sheriff Marcou in particular, who sat on the 911 board. And we found that we had a bit of an issue with 911 in our schools, and it wasn't reaching all of our schools. So we reacted, and we've been working on that ever since. I've worked with the institutions committees in the House and the Senate in order to provide for funds in order to come to compliance. So this is not something that's new, but we need to expedite this, I believe. So again, having an assessment across the state, I don't know what the cost will be. I don't know what they'll come back with, but I think we should be prepared and to try and work with the locals, the schools, and so forth, to determine what their needs are, and to provide them with funding in order for them to expedite whatever they need to try and avert anything in the short term.
You mentioned Florida; they just passed a law signed into law by the governor there that basically provides money to arm teachers for those schools that want to do that. Is that a good idea?
You know, from my perspective, I think that there are better ways to avert a crisis such as this. I know that there are different opinions as to whether this is a good idea or not. I don't think that it will work for Vermont. So I'd rather work on areas that where we have common goals and that we can agree. But I don't believe that this will this has merit here in Vermont.
So the legislature is looking at a number of different options. We had the bill that passed the Senate that raised the age to purchase a weapon from 18 to 21. Also, a universal background check, except for immediate family members. Do you support that legislation?
Here's what I had said. Again, with my action plan, as well as the assessment in the schools and the $5 million worth of grants, I also said I'm asking the Vermont Press Bureau and the Association of Broadcasters to work with us to come up with a plan, a public service announcement campaign to, if you see something, say something. I think that that's really important, this discussion, because as I said before, had it not been for two people stepping forward, I'm not sure that this would have been averted. This again, one disturbed individual, his plan was to exceed the kill at Virginia Tech. And as a reminder, Virginia Tech was 32. And it wasn't, again, it wasn't a question of if he was going to do it. It was just a question of which day. And so that gets my attention. And along with that, I called for a ban on bump stocks. I believe that this was a workaround of the automatic weapon ban. And I believe that we should be banning bump stocks, and also an evaluation and improvement of the current background check process. I'm not sure that we're adhering to that, and that's something we're looking at as we speak, and I believe this will be a continuing conversation over the next few months to determine what we can do better with the federal system and how we comply with that, and whether are we supplying the information that we need to, and is it working well, either regionally or on a federal basis. So we need to address that. And I had said that we should be considering increasing the age requirement to purchase firearms from 18 to 21. I had said, and I truly believe this, that there should be exceptions for anyone that signs up for the military because they receive the training in the military with weapons. They understand the dangers associated with that. As well as law enforcement, exceptions for law enforcement. If you're 18 and you're in law enforcement, then you should be able to buy a gun. And as well, those who have completed an accredited firearms safety course, such as the NRA course I took when I was probably 11, and I believe that was powerful. It's something that I remember growing up, and something I still take with me. Understanding the responsibility of having a firearm and how to properly use it, how to be safe with it. So if you satisfy any of the three, then I believe you should be able to buy a gun at 18. Otherwise, I think you should wait till 21.
And how about the background check? Let's say a neighbor wants to sell a weapon to a neighbor. Should they be subject to the background check?
Yeah, there needs to be a system, I believe. I've thought about this with myself. I own firearms myself. I've been collecting them my entire life in some respects, a lifelong hunter. And I've never sold any of my guns. I just seem to collect them. But if I was to sell them, I think there should be, from my own standpoint, with all this changing world that we're seeing today, and for me, we have to recognize that it is changing. We may not like it, but it's changing. But I don't want the liability. I don't want the responsibility. I would like to know if I was selling it to someone that they were safe and that they didn't. There was no reason that they shouldn't have one. So, but I think there needs to be a process in doing so. I've thought about this a lot, and I think it's something that we have to. If the background check doesn't pass the legislature, I think we should take a look and see if there's a way. To make this more user friendly for those who want to sell a weapon, a gun, that maybe they could go to their local law enforcement or some means of doing so without costing a lot of money, but from a safety aspect.
So we got this email from Raymond in Bakersfield, who says that he wrote your office and got what he says, quote, "I got what I assume is a prepared position paper response to the email that I sent you. It stated, quote, to be clear, this memo does not recommend taking any guns or gun rights away from law-abiding citizens. And Raymond thinks that S-55, that's the bill that does the universal background checks and raising the age to purchase a weapon from 18 to 21, does exactly that. So what would you say to Raymond?
Well, I think we'll disagree. I don't think anything that I propose, I don't believe infringes upon the Second Amendment right of anyone. I'm a firm believer in the Second Amendment. I've been an advocate for the Second Amendment. And I don't believe that putting with the conditions, the caveats that I'm talking about, I don't believe it infringes upon those rights. And so I would just disagree that I believe that putting conditions in, keeping firearms away from people that should not have them, I think is important. I think we can see instances where. If we had had something in place, maybe something wouldn't have happened. You know, I reflect on 9/11, right? 9/11 was something that was changed the world in some respects. Before that, we were all running to our gates at the last minute, flying out. We didn't have to go through all the security that we did before. Did I like that change? I'm not sure. But do I think it saved maybe saved some lives? Probably, but hard to measure. And I believe our world's changing right before our eyes now, and we have to act. We have to take the proper path forward in order to protect lives as best we can. But getting back to again, this isn't just about guns. It's about violence, and we have to get to the root cause of that at the same time. So there are a number of areas that we're seeking assistance with, whether it's strengthening our mental health system, including additional inpatient services, treatment facilities, outreach workers, healthier communities. I mean, There's things that I have in our budget that would help with that. As well, I want to establish, as part of our action plan, a governor's violence prevention task force to examine all aspects of school safety and community protection, because it's not just safety in our schools, but safety for our communities in any event. And I want them to report back in December 1st of 2018. I'm going to have an executive order to appoint this this task force, but it'll be people from both sides, all walks of life, in order for us to figure out what we can do again to keep Vermont safe.
So just to be clear, you want the legislature in the next 2 months to pass a bill that raises the age from 18 to 21 to purchase a weapon, that has some sort of universal background check component, and perhaps if a judge determines that a person is at an imminent risk to themselves or another person, that their guns can be confiscated. Is that the package you're looking for?
Well, that what I said was evaluating some improvements to the background check process, as well as having the debate about whether we should go from 18 to 21. I'm not sure. Maybe neither one of those will pass. I'm not sure at this point in time. What I think is really important is focusing on areas that we do agree. The S-221 that allows for law enforcement and the courts to make sure that we have the ability to take a firearm away from someone that who shouldn't have it, that poses an imminent threat to the, both themselves or others. I think that's important, especially with the discussion we're having right now with the individual in Fairhaven, as well as maybe the death a couple weeks ago in Royalton. Both of those are cases where I think maybe having some of the provisions that we're advocating for, that there seems to be some agreement on both sides. It passed the Senate 30-0. And let's pass what we can, but we are going to have to continue to have this dialogue.
Now, I understand that the raising the age from 18 to 21 might not pass and the universal background check might not pass, but I guess my question to you is, do you want them to pass?
I, again, with some of my conditions, the 18 to 21, if we were able to have the carve out, the exceptions for those members of the military, law enforcement, and if you have completed a firearm safety course, I believe those are conditions that I think would provide for those the fish and game clubs and so forth that provide those services now to take the responsibility and to be part of the solution in this ever growing crisis that we're seeing.
Let's go to our listeners and start off with Elizabeth, who is calling from Hyde Park. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
What's on your mind today?
Hi, I'm just a little bit confused because I hear Governor Scott speaking about, you know, programs like See Something, Say Something, and the whole reason that the Florida shooting happened is because of government negligence. The government was informed about the shooter on many different levels, and they continued to do nothing. Then the shooter entered the school with a firearm, and law enforcement still didn't go in or do anything. So had the teachers have been armed in that Florida school, they would have been able to do something, maybe save a few lives. So, you know, I think that's where we need to focus on is how to improve government and not attack the law-abiding citizens' rights who voted for Governor Scott. Universal background checks really, really aren't going to work. The majority of felons in the state of Vermont obtain their firearms from theft or family or the combination of two. So, I mean, what's the universal background check really going to improve? We have the lowest crime rates in the nation. And then I hear Governor Scott saying things like, you know, an 18-year-old can still purchase a firearm with hunter safety. So what is this going to prevent? So somebody can take a hunter safety class and then still go to a school and shoot it up, and it will be unarmed.
Okay, Elizabeth, we really appreciate your phone call. You made a lot of important points. Governor, there are a lot of people listening today who say, you know, there's a reason why these shooters choose schools. They are gun-free zones. There are a certain number of people who feel that that's what the mistake is and that shooters wouldn't select these schools if they knew that their teachers were armed. You're not buying that argument?
Well, I think at this point in time, again, it seems as though the focus has been on schools, but I would advocate that it goes further than that. That's why I'm saying we need to look at the root cause, the violence in some respects. Look at Las Vegas. Look at the number of deaths there. That wasn't in a school. And I'm not sure what protections could have been taken place if you'd had all the staff at that event. If they'd all had guns, I don't think that would have been could have prevented that from happening. So I would ask Elizabeth if she has read the affidavit, and if she hasn't, we can send it to her. I would suggest that she reads that. Because I believe the same as she did, that before the Fairhaven incident, we still continue to be the safest state in the nation. We have a low crime rate. We're very fortunate to have that. This one incident, had he been successful, this individual had been successful in Fairhaven and had been able to follow through on his plan, which was he had a kill list. He had his plan was to have more kills than Virginia Tech. And again, as a reminder, Virginia Tech was 32. We would have gone from one of the safest states in the nation to one of the unsafest states in the nation per capita. So I had to reflect on that, on the information that I saw, reading the affidavit, understanding that again, this wasn't a question of if. It was a question of which day, and still, which is fascinating and frightening at the same time, is that this individual had said, this may not happen, and he's talking with the investigators at this point. He's saying, this may not happen today, it may not happen next week, it may not happen next year, but it's going to happen. So that, again, puts a great deal of burden on the shoulders of anyone who is accountable to the public safety of Vermonters. And I take that very seriously. And I'm a lifelong hunter. I'm a believer in the Second Amendment. I strongly support it. But I believe there's nothing that I am saying or doing that recommends taking any guns or gun rights away from law-abiding citizens. And it does not suggest limiting in any way a young Vermonter's ability to engage in our hunting and shooting sports, because you can still have a weapon. You just can't buy one unless you take the course that I think had a great influence on my life and taught me that there's a certain amount of responsibility when you have a gun and when you go hunting and what you're supposed to do. And I think the NRA course that I took then is something that's being replicated again. I think the vast majority of sportsmen, most sportsmen, maybe all of them, have a great deal of respect for guns and understand their responsibility as well.
Governor, let's talk about school financing. The average school budget this year went up about 1.5% on town meeting day, certainly below the rate of inflation. And a lot of school boards think they did a really good job restricting costs, bringing and restraining some of their expenses. And yet then they hear you say, you want more.
Yeah. I want to be very clear. I agree with them. I agree. They did incredible work. They did an amazing job limiting spending growth on the local level. And I appreciate their work, because in November, as you remember, I urged school districts to keep their per pupil spending below 2.5% because of this growth rate calculation that I believe is real. I don't believe we should be spending more than Vermonters earn. And the growth rate calculation we came up, this rolling average over the last 6 years, is about 2.36%. So I sent this letter to school boards asking them to adhere to that, come under that growth rate, and they did. They did an amazing job, and I've given them great credit over the last few weeks in doing so. So they've done their part. They were able to. We had to by statute we had to send a letter to the legislature, telling them if we do nothing at all this year, we are going to see a 9-cent increase in the in property in this taxes, education tax. So what that meant for us when the school boards adhered to that growth rate calculation, they came in a lot less than 2.5%. It's going to save us about $30 million. So they've come down, or 25 to 30, whatever it is. They've taken a big, a large chunk out of that increase. So they've done about 3 cents. So they've done their part. Now we need to come up with other ways, I believe, to reduce it further, so that we don't increase the education tax at all this year. And I think it's doable by taking a look at some of the. We made some suggestions early on. We sent our suggestions to the legislature. It was about $75 million worth of savings, and we're still asking them to take a look. And if we can, take a look at special ed, take a look at a statewide health care contract. And as you remember, last year we had quite a debate on that. We never did. We didn't see all the savings from that $26 million that I'd asked for last year. But it's the contracts are going to open back up, and I still think it's a good idea. We had as a result of our compromise, we put a commission forward that took a look at this issue during the off season. They came back with a recommendation saying we should do it. So I believe there's still money to be saved there. The contracts will be opened back up next year, and that we can save more money. So if we can find savings, whether in the staff to student ratios, or the special education, or the statewide health care contract, and we'll use money, we'll find money to buy that down. If we can make that investment, if we can assure Vermonters that we're going to save that money in the future, we'll buy it down in some way so that we can make sure that we pass this without increasing education taxes on Vermonters.
So what happens if the legislature does not take actions, does not look at some of your plans, increasing the student-staff ratio or restricting budget growth for high-spending towns, doesn't adopt something like a statewide health care teacher's contract? What happens next?
Well, there's an education tax increase.
And so
I think that's unacceptable.
So what do you do about that?
Well, again, we're halfway through here. I'm still hopeful that they will see the merit in some of what we're saying, some of the proposals. I know that the House Education Committee, Dave Sharp, has told me they're working on special education right now. So there may be an area of savings there. And if we can account for that, and if we can say we'll save X million dollars over the next 3 to 5 years, we should have a 5-year plan, because there's no reason why we can't find savings in a 1.7. Now, it used to be 1.6 billion. Now it's $1.7 billion education costs to the state, single largest expenditure in state government, $1.7 billion. And we're educating 76,000 students, 30,000 fewer than 25 years ago. There's no reason we can't find money there to save. There's just no reason, because it's an inefficient system. The structure was set up for over 100,000 students, 103,000 to 106,000. And we're educating 76 now. We have to look for a different way of doing it.
So you're committed to absolutely no increase in the statewide property tax rate?
Because I think it's doable, yes.
And so we'll see if the legislature takes the steps to go along with that.
Yeah. I mean, I would challenge our listeners here, if I came to you knowing if you had a check for $1.7 billion and I told you we had 76,000 students to educate, I dare say it'd look much different than it does today. We have to have the courage to think outside the box and find ways that we can provide a 21st century education in a much different way, because technology exists, things change, and we have to adapt to that.
Let's talk to Robert, who is calling from Bethel. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Bob. Hello, Governor.
Hi.
Hey, I have two subjects to talk about. One is scrapping the inspection program. That's number one, just scrapping it all together and starting over. Number two is the elephant in the classroom, and you just went on and on, which I respect you for with regards to the cost of education. There's the elephant in the classroom is the supervisory unions. We've got 160 supervisory unions across the state, averaging about $500,000 a year to support. That's low. So if we add that up, I don't know what 160 times 500,000 is. There's the answer to your question. The layer of supervisory unions across the state is so fat and so overweighted. The child is being deprived from special ed needs and all the gifts and things we just talked about. They're being deprived because of the salaries of supervisory guys. And, you know, the heads of the supervisory unions. I've investigated it, and I requested the salaries of the supervisor right down to the janitor in the White River supervisory union. And it's just too much. We don't need it. We've got kids. We can't afford a phys ed teacher in a school in Rochester because we don't have the money. We keep riffing the teachers and the education, strangling the children's education. Meanwhile, no one gets fired or riffed at the supervisory level. It's way fat. That's the answer to the elephant in the classroom.
Okay. Robert, we appreciate your phone call. There are a lot of people who would agree with Robert.
I'm one of them. I think we should be looking at all areas where we can find savings. I think administrative costs are something that need to be considered as well. When you're, again, educating 30,000 fewer students than 25 years ago, administrative costs shouldn't be increasing at a dramatic rate. We should be able to do better. So I'm ready, willing, and able to look at any areas where we can have a more efficient, cost-effective, and a high-quality type of education system, which I believe, again, I've talked a lot about cradle to career, and I believe that. That before spending $1.7 billion, we should be able to invest more in early care and learning. We should be able to invest more in higher education. And we need to. We can do so within the $1.7 billion structure. So administrative costs should be part of the discussion. I believe that. His other area was the scrapping the inspections. I look for areas of common interests and goals and so forth. I don't believe we could scrap the inspection process in Vermont. That might be the wish of some. But when you compare it, I know that Florida, for instance, I don't believe that they have an inspection program there. But they don't have the extreme conditions that we do. They don't have the salt. They don't have the cold. They don't have all that goes along with that, the frost heaves and so forth. So it's a little bit different than Florida. But what I can tell you is that we're working on right now. I've had a committee working on this for a number of months. We're going to streamline the process. We've taken the manuals and we've compressed that, and we're upgrading. We've taken three manuals and combining them into one manual that's for motorcycles and cars and commercial vehicles and melded into one. And it's going to be much simpler. We're going to focus on the safety aspects, hopefully make it less expensive, and just simplify the process.
I thought in the time remaining, we could look at a number of bills and get your thoughts about it. A lot of people are wondering about the minimum wage bill that passed the Senate, increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour over a six-year period, looked at in the House right now. Could you see yourself signing that bill?
No. Not in its present form, maybe not at all. I've been part of this process. I, as you know, served in the Senate for a number of years, and I remember having the debate on minimum wage even back then. It was probably 14 years ago. And I remember the debate on the floor, and I remember senators saying, it was a struggle to increase the minimum wage at that point. And they said, under what we're passing today, if we take this action, because we're going to have a cost of living increase every single year, if we take this action today, we'll never have to debate this ever again. This is it. This is all we'll have to do. And I voted for it at that point. Since then, we've had another rendition and increased it probably 2 or 3 years ago. Once again, and now they would like to raise it to $15. Now, I look for areas of common agreement. I want Vermonters to make more money. I want there to be more prosperity. But I think there's a better way to do it than artificially inflating the wages, which could be counterproductive in other ways when you consider that. Even the legislature's economists have said that this may have an adverse effect on jobs. It could be it would be a severe impact on rural parts of the state, and I'm positive that it will have a detrimental effect on the Connecticut River side when you have New Hampshire that does not have that and doesn't have a sales tax and doesn't have a lot of things that we have in Vermont. And I'm afraid that would just be a nail in the coffin to many, many more business along that corridor. So I believe, and as well, these small businesses, most of the businesses in Vermont are small businesses. And these small businesses that are just struggling to get by right now, particularly the mom and pops that are working a lot of hours now, I'm not sure what they're going to do. They reduce hours, work more themselves. It just seems as though this is a way to artificially raise the cost of living for all Vermonters.
Let me ask you about a sexual harassment bill that got very strong support in the House recently. It offers additional protections for people who have experienced sexual harassment in the workplace. Are you supportive of this bill?
Yeah, I am. And in fact, I've asked them to expedite, get it to my desk. We'll sign it.
Why do you think it's important?
Well, I think nobody should be harassed in the workplace. I believe that we should take every measure possible. I have zero tolerance for harassment of any sort. So I believe that this is important, and I think it would give peace of mind to many. So if we all agree, let's get moving with it.
Let's talk to Monica, who is calling from South Burlington. Hi, Monica. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask Governor Scott if he would consider starting to bill pharmaceuticals for all the opioid problems we have and apply that fee to our school budgets, because our teachers are acting like family counselors as well, and that's a big part of why our expenses are what they are. So if we can bill the pharmas and send it to our school budget, all the taxpayers may be very happy.
I wouldn't be surprised, but we'll see some sort of action in the next few years against some of the drug companies. I think there's already action being taken by some attorney generals across the country, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see that in the near future. It reminds me a lot of the tobacco settlements. In fact, we had some good news yesterday from the Attorney General on that front, and there's about $28 million coming to the state of Vermont sooner rather than later. But I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see some action taken such as that in our state or across the country.
Let's talk to Ian, who is calling from Morrisville. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I'm a 2000 graduate of People's Academy. I currently work out of state year-round for the most part. And when I was in high school, most of the teachers, the faculty, everybody was pushing us to get to college, to get out of state. What are we doing to bring back the 35 to 40-year-olds that left, that have not come back, that should be here starting businesses and providing for a tax base so that we will not be a broke state? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Ian.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. You hit the nail on the head there. That's one of our biggest challenges. We have a changing demographic in this state. We're getting older. We're not keeping and we're not attracting the number of youth that we should. In fact, when you look at the working age population, it's being reduced. The age group to 25 to 40 or so has been reduced by about 30,000 over the last 10 years. And that has a detrimental effect on our economy, because we need the skilled workforce, but we also We also need more people paying in. So when that happens, it puts the burden on the rest of us who are still here. So we there's a few things when we're talking with our youth. And the fertile ground in some respects is our colleges and universities. We have about 40,000 at any one time going to our colleges and universities. We graduate maybe 10,000 a year. And many of you have heard from my 631, where we have six fewer workers in our workforce every single day, about 2,000 fewer workers every single year. In fact, we have fewer people working today than we did in 2009, about a little over 15,000 fewer people working today than there were in 2009. That's the reality, and that's what we're facing. So when you ask them, what is it? What can we do to keep you here? First of all, they need opportunity. They need a job. And so there's good news on that front. We're turning the corner. The economy's getting better. There's a sense of optimism out there. When I go to places like Mack Molding in the southern part of the state, or I go up into the Northeast Kingdom to NSA, or I go to Rutland talking to GE, they have hundreds of jobs open and available right now. They would hire if they could find people to fill them. So that's the good news. The other aspect is when we ask our youth, what we could do to keep you here, they say we need decent, affordable housing. So last year when we passed our budget, with no increases in taxes or fees or any increase in the statewide property tax, we also had included some investments. One was that $35 million housing bond. That will leverage another $65 million for a total of about $100 million worth of housing in Vermont over the next few years, making it the single largest investment in housing we've ever seen. So that should help in that regard. We've got some other ideas with credits, homeowner credits and so forth, that are going through the legislature now. We hope that we're successful in obtaining those. And we can do some other things with housing. The next part, though, is the affordability issue. And that's why I keep talking about I'm not saying we cut everything. I'm saying we can't grow at the rate we've been growing at from a budget standpoint. We can't keep spending at a rate of 5% growth when we're only growing at 2-3%. So I'm saying adhere to that 2.36% growth, just like we're asking for in our budget. Make investments in the areas that where we can bring more people in, make it more affordable. And then reach out to those people. And that's what our Think Vermont Move campaign is about. We're asking the legislature to help us out with that. And it's an initiative, a technology initiative that we think has some merit. We can bring more people in. It's been used in South Dakota, and they're bringing back one worker every single day. So if we could do things like that, we can turn the corner on this.
Almost out of time, but I did notice that the Secretary of State's office yesterday, your campaign filed that it had raised $120,000 for your reelection campaign in 2018. No question that you're seeking reelection,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I intend to run. I haven't made that announcement, but I intend to run. And we haven't focused on raising any money at this point in time. I'm just trying to get through the legislative session. And I believe that we have a lot of work to do. So we're focusing on that. As soon as the legislature's over, we'll make an announcement and start getting serious.
And your agenda would be something that we saw from 2 years ago, the affordability of Vermont?
I don't think it's changed. I still think we have a lot of work to do. We made a lot of gains. I'm very proud of what we've accomplished, but we have a lot more to do. And I believe if we can all pull in the same direction, we can make Vermont a much more prosperous state.
We'll be following many of the issues that we discussed today in the weeks and months ahead. Many thanks to Governor Phil Scott for taking the time to be on the program today. Governor, we really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me on.